Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/frightday.
MacGyver is fucking awful.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I don't disagree with that.
The Rugrats are awful.
Hey, it is Fright Day. I'm your host, Byron, and tonight, hot dogs, fireworks, serial murder, what happens when an unwanted guest crashes the birthday celebration of the United States of America? You'll find out tonight as we review Derek Munger's You Are Not Alone. And what has three fingers is 7 feet tall?
Nine.
Wait, what?
Nine.
Nine fingers?
Nine fingers?
No, three fingers, 9 feet tall, bitch.
Talking to the microphone.
And I'm told is real. We're talking the lizard man of Scape or Swamp in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies. I'm joined today by the voice you heard moments ago, Kelly.
Hi, everyone.
And Sam.
Hey, guys. Kelly looks like she's having a stroke more than usual.
Are you all right?
I'm just really excited about my hat.
All right. Well, okay.
Let's just leave that out of context.
Yeah, I'll post a picture on our Twitter account, at Fright Day on Twitter. It's been a very cryptic week over at American Horror Story, Kelly. Hard segue.
Yeah, that whole symbol is just annoying. I don't know what it means.
So
I think it's awesome.
So we were given a few things this week. The release date of September 14th, which I want to talk about here in a second. A confirmed cast of Angela Bassett, Lady Gaga, Cheyenne Jackson, and Evan Peters. And a six with a question mark built in it.
It doesn't even make sense.
I mean it is a six, like, and it's an ancient sixth season.
I think
that does
it's
make
supposed
sense.
Supposed to be cryptic.
Is it Egyptian in nature?
You know, I don't know.
I think it's a six for season six and a question mark saying, we're not going to tell you anything.
Well, I mean, Ryan Murphy, the creator, did give us a couple things.
I think that probably is right. I think that it's... Fuck.
What's that?
Probably nothing.
I mean, most likely.
Six and a question
mark.
About the Riddler?
He said this season will be a little tighter, a little more claustrophobic with a smaller cast, which makes me nervous that maybe Sarah Paulson might not come back this season.
They can't do it without Sarah Paulson.
Maybe no Kathy Bates? I don't know. This season is going to be something that we've never done before. Not opulent, more rogue and more dark, set over two time periods, and something to do with children? Oh. Kelly's favorite thing.
I'm obviously not going to be watching this season.
What do you think the season's going to be? Do you have any guesses? It was about this time last year we were guessing what the hotel season of American Horror Story was going to be.
I mean, children. It could go two ways. The children could be the ones in peril, you know, kept in confined spaces, like he's talking about. Or children could be the antagonists.
Just children of the corn.
I could be
or
children
Village of the
corn.
Damned.
I've heard a couple rumors of a possible orphanage
Ooh,
scenario.
I like that.
It seems so close to the asylum, though.
And in reality, I know you guys are a season behind on American Horror Story. There was a little bit of a children arc in last season. Mm. I don't know if they'll continue that, especially if they're talking that it's set over two time periods. They did shoot down the Slender Man theory.
Thank
yeah.
God.
It could have been done well, but it could have been done really horribly as well.
You can't make a TV series, and you shouldn't make a movie out of a creepypasta.
Area 51 is another theory that people proposed. I don't know what that has to do with children, other than maybe short aliens or children.
Yeah, that would be cool.
He could be leaving us false breadcrumbs to drag us way off track.
Well, it's true. I mean, these are, for the most part, are just fan theories. I don't think he's come out and said anything other than that it's not Slender Man.
Oh, fans are stupid.
I'm a fan, Sam.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Another proposed theory, a cult. I would love that. We haven't had any cults on American Horror Story, have we?
I mean, the witch thing was kind of a cult.
Oh, it's a coven.
It was a coven. A big difference.
Isn't a coven a cult?
No.
I feel like a coven's a cult.
Oh.
It's like saying a herd is a flock.
A flamingo is a flamboyance.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Rhinoceroses are a crash.
No matter what happens.
Crow is a murder.
All right. That's fun.
Ravens are an unkindness.
I don't have any more.
That's it?
That's it.
All right. I don't know what the season's going to be. I am upset that it's not coming out in October. It's just like a mark of the season.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that it came out in October. I always feel like it should wrap in October instead.
No.
I want the season to drag on.
Start at Halloween and go into the cold months.
Whatever they do with American Horror Story, I'm going to watch it. I look forward to more cryptic clues. Sam? Did you have a chance to watch anything this week?
You watched nothing.
I failed. It was a real busy week.
Don't say it. I'm making excuses.
Are you watching? I'm not saying anything.
Yep, we are watching Game of Thrones.
It's Game of Thrones again.
But guess what? I'm watching just as much Game of Thrones as he is.
You know,
I finished all of the Bates Motel through season 3 because that's all on Netflix.
Wait, really?
And I watched a movie. So
you know, you guys could have avoided all of this by watching Game of Thrones as it happened.
No,
like
we couldn't have. We just got access to HBO.
No, that would have been awful.
It's all right, Sam. I forgive you. I almost didn't watch anything. Before I talk about the things I did, Kelly, Bates Motel.
It's fun. I think it's one of those I can watch a little bit more passively. Like Game of Thrones,
You said this exact same thing about four or five episodes.
Did I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It stands true.
It stands true through 3 seasons at least. A couple things have been really predictable, but a couple things have thrown me for a loop. I like that Freddie Highmore.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Not the most high praise.
It's not one of those series that if it was canceled, I'd throw a temper tantrum, but I definitely enjoy it and will definitely watch the next seasons as they come out.
Oh, good. Well, I really enjoyed this season. I don't know how far you are. You're not on the current season. You're one before.
Correct. But it has been renewed for 5.
It has. So you've got more to look forward to.
Yep.
Cool. And what else did you say you watched?
Altergeist.
Altergeist?
Yeah, it's like a poltergeist, but an altergeist.
What, like a physical altar?
Well, I'll read you the synopsis. King's Ransom Winery is one of the most haunted places in America with a long history of bizarre suicides. 6 ghost hunters have been given the rare opportunity to conduct a paranormal investigation. Oh. What they discover terrifies them. So here's the thing. It was actually pretty fun.
Found footage, obviously.
Well, no, not really. I mean, there were parts filmed through their cameras, but it wasn't a found footage movie.
Okay, bold
move.
It was
just a regular movie, which was nice, actually, the way that they put it together. There were a couple random actors that you would recognize from a couple of things. For example, the lead girl. Do you guys remember the character of Morella in True Blood? One of the fairies?
Like a lead fairy.
So she was our lead girl in this. And then there was this kind of side characters. Brendan Fletcher. I don't know if you guys remember, but he was in The Revenant.
Inside of a bear?
No, he was Fryman.
They were all stinky old bearded guys.
Yeah, it's tough to say.
Anyhow, there were a couple decent acting performances. The story was very, very cool. Basically through, and I actually checked the timer on it, at minute 28, it went real south with some really bad CG. And then it went further south. And somehow this movie ended up, spoiler alert, eventually incorporating aliens and ghosts.
Yeah, I don't like this poster whatsoever.
And I still felt a bit
let
down by it.
This is an altergeist.
I guess it is. It actually, it opened up with an interesting premise.
Okay.
And then it got interesting for 28 minutes, and then it fell apart.
And falling apart for you is catching fire.
Well, no. Like, let me just be clear.
Landing in a dumpster full of hypodermic needles.
It was like a well-produced movie, so it was fun to watch. I guess just the resolution in the end I was kind of disappointed by. But I did like that they brought in aliens. They just did it in a really shitty way. I like the name, though. It's a fun name, huh?
Altergeist.
I think it's not a fun name.
It's an alternate poltergeist.
And they're going dimensional here?
Maybe.
All right.
Anyhow, it was fun. I was more diligent than my husband.
Well, you did watch a movie.
I won.
Okay. I watched one movie. Well, I guess 2, but one's not horror. Should I talk about it?
You should talk about whatever you want to.
Rugrats in Paris.
No,
we're not going to talk about horror.
Okay, nope. I'm going to quickly breeze over the fact that I did see Independence Day Resurgence.
Oh, that counts. That's close enough.
A lot of negative buzz about this film.
Yeah.
But I'm here to say I didn't hate it at all.
Compared to the first.
I thought it was a bold, futuristic world. I think they took an interesting leap.
How much worse than the first one?
It's definitely silly. I'm not going to say it's bad.
Well, the first one was silly too, though.
Exactly. And what sequel isn't sillier than the original?
28 weeks later.
I don't think that it was
Conjuring
more.
Too.
Remember the time they sang the Elvis song in the living room?
It was touching. That was very silly.
It was a little silly.
It was goofy.
This movie worked for me for a couple of reasons. I'm very afraid of large things crashing into the earth. For the longest time I had...
So does this mean you're scared of aliens?
No, they don't usually crash.
So like...
Hello, Melancholy. Roswell?
Melancholia.
Oh, Melancholy. Sure. Melancholia was a very tense film. Yeah.
That's such a good movie. That's my really favorite Lars von Trier movie.
Oh, it's great. Ugh. For the longest time, I had these reoccurring dreams of airplanes just falling out of the sky or crashing.
Donnie Darko style?
You know, I haven't seen Donnie Darko.
Wow.
I saw it once in high school. I was not of an age to really appreciate it.
Really overrated. People like to think that it's smarter
underrated?
Than it is.
It's smarter than you.
I don't know.
It could be smarter than me and still be stupid.
Sure.
Huh?
With the world that they built, they use the alien technology in the future. They've conquered gravity, let's say.
Right.
So there's...
That was in the preview.
It's kind of... Okay, I don't know what was in the preview.
You aren't spoiling.
Jetsons-style vehicles.
That's fun.
Helicopters without propellers that still look like helicopters, which is kind of tight.
Oh, nice. Like an Avatar or Aliens.
Yeah. I think that they executed the CG for this very well. I mean, Jeff Goldblum... Incredibly charming, as always. I love Micah Monroe from It Follows. I fell in love with her more so in this film.
Forgot she was in that, yeah.
Like, butterflies, because I'm in love with her.
Yeah.
If she's listening.
Hello.
Hi, Micah.
Be scared.
Bill Pullman. What? Come on now.
Hey.
Bill Pullman, fantastic.
It's a delightful crush.
Thank you. I love Bill Pullman. I think he killed it in this. I don't know what people expected from a sequel to a movie where Will Smith punches an alien in the face and says, "Welcome to Earth."
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I say check it out. Another film that has my stamp of approval, the 2007 film Murder Party.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the first film directed by Jeremy Saunier.
You may have been in a coma. We watched that when they were running... the nonstop magnet releasing movies.
Wait,
when we were at the Stanley? Yeah.
It was on what, the TV?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that. But for those who didn't see it,
I didn't see it either.
On Halloween night,
sorry.
An unlucky loser shows up to a murder party where a group of pretentious art students intend to use his death as some sort of elevated art project.
Oh, God.
As the night goes on, their stupidity sparks an extremely entertaining string of mishaps. Sharply written, dark comedy. It's kind of rough, but it's definitely still a Saunier film. It was great. It was a glimpse into the future of films like Blue Ruin and Green Room.
I agree. I thought Murder Party was really fun.
Well, now I'm going to have to watch it.
It's dumb, but smart. Yeah. You know, Macon Blair is in it, playing a character named Macon, which is always fun. I thought the special effects were appropriate. Just the right amount of indie horror blood.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the movie.
I'm glad you got to see that one, Byron.
Yeah. I had it on my DVD shelf for a very long time, and I finally watched it. Kelly, in between going to Bates Motel, clear your throat, and watching Rugrats go to Paris?
Yes, and Altergeist.
And Altergeist.
And Game of Thrones.
Did you have time to learn a little bit about a scaly, hairy man with three fingers on each hand?
So much.
Let's talk about the Lizard Man in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
A little thrill, taking a little trip down to Bishopville. That's in South Carolina in the county of Lee. The Browntown Road is the place to be, the home of the Lizard Man. Catch him if you can. Go to Lee County, there's $1 million bounty for the Lizard Man.
The first thing that I want to make very clear is that the Lizard Man of Scape or Swamp has nothing to do with the Lizard Man heavily tattooed circus performer.
Sure, let's get that out of the way.
Before one of you makes some asinine joke.
No, I think that's an important differentiation.
This is a cryptid, not a...
man.
Man. Eyewitnesses have described a 7 to 9 foot tall human-like being with either green or brown scaly skin, 3-toed feet and hands, and also, periodically, glowing red eyes like the ones in the Lizard Man picture that will be on the website in the show notes.
Friday.com.
There are multiple sources for our episode tonight, but by far the leader of Lizard Man research has been Lyle Blackburn, who wrote a book called Lizard Man, The True Story of Bishopville Monster, that came out in 2013. We just so happened to have an autographed copy, and we interviewed Mr. Blackburn himself a little bit about Lizard Man, but mostly about The Beast of Boggy Creek in episode 29. So you can check that out.
Yeah, it's a great interview.
And a great book, too. I am obviously a skeptic. I really, really enjoyed both of Blackburn's books.
He does a great job of covering the skeptic points as well. I mean, he's a good researcher. I'd like to say that I try to research in the same vein as Mr. Blackburn. So the first official report was filed in 1988 when a young man stopped his car on a roadside near the swamp to change a tire in the middle of the night. However, there are actually lesser known reports from earlier than 1988. Dating back to 500 years prior, Native Americans who lived in the area, both Cherokee and Alabama tribes, told stories about a race of men that came from the sea, had tails, scaly skin, existed by eating fish, and then when the fish population dropped off, they disappeared and were never seen again. Perhaps the most fun part about these men that were described in these Native American legends was that in order to sit, they had to dig holes because their tails were not flexible. They were like real bony and stiff.
Lizard
so they
problems.
Actually had to dig holes to sit down.
They didn't have to sit down. Most animals with tails don't sit down. They just like lay flat
well,
on their
Well, apparently
bellies.
These guys wanted to sit down.
You know, if you're walking on all fours, you just lay on your belly like a dog.
But they don't walk on all fours. They're bipedal.
All right.
So like I said, we've got some earlier reports, but we're going to fast forward. July of 1988, Tom and Mary Way called the sheriff of Lee County with a report that their car had been scratched up by some unknown creature. When the police were investigating, locals started gathering around and told the police that it might have been the Lizard Man. That was when the sheriff first heard of it, and it came out that people had actually been seeing this greenish-brown lizard humanoid for a number of years in the area. Upon hearing this story, Chris Davis, a local teenager, and his father, Tommy, came to the sheriff's offices to report what had happened to him 2 weeks prior on June 29th. After working a night shift at McDonald's, he was driving home at 2:30 a.m., hard-working 17-year-old upstanding citizen.
Grease collar.
He was driving along Browntown Road. Shortly after passing the Scape Ore Bridge, he got a flat tire. Here's an excerpt from the Lyle Blackburn book about Davis's report. Also, for you assholes who are going to try and be skeptics
right.
about this.
You don't need to approach it that hard.
I'm just saying, Davis took a polygraph test in August of that summer, passed every single question with flying colors.
All right.
Just for the record.
Okay.
No, by all accounts, the young man was level-headed, mature for his age, a general, reliable source.
Chris was parked at the intersection of a small dirt road that led into the surrounding fields of cotton, high grass, and trees. There were no houses for at least half a mile. He didn't exactly feel like changing a tire on the lonely stretch of road, but his own house was still 7 miles away, so walking was out of the question. Faced with no other choice, Davis opened the trunk and pulled out a tire iron, jack, and a spare. He wanted to get it over with. The bugs were already starting to eat him, and the fish sandwiches he had brought from work were getting cold in the passenger seat. Okay, pause. If you're working at McDonald's, that's what you take home is the fish sandwich?
You know, maybe he knows something we don't.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe you can see that it's like the most...
Having worked at food service places, you usually work your way through the things that were your favorite when you started, and then you get to where the only thing you can tolerate is the things that you've never eaten or would eat before.
Interesting. All right, back in. Davis swapped the tire as quickly as he could and gathered up his tools. As he was placing them back in the trunk, something caught his eye about 30 yards away.
His hands, slippery with tartar sauce.
It was moving towards him. They were in the car still.
Okay.
It was moving towards him, swinging its arms. In an interview printed in the Item newspaper on July 20th, 1988, Chris recalled that, quote,
"I had just put the tire in the trunk when I see this thing coming from the trees."
He described it as a large, humanoid-like creature with glowing red eyes.
"It was green, wet-like, about 7 feet tall, and had three fingers," he told the press,
or in simpler terms, a red-eyed devil. The thing was getting closer by the second. The young man panicked.
"I ran to the driver's side and got in,"
Chris recalled.
"When I was sitting in the car, I saw him from the neck down. He was outside the driver's side window. After about 2 yards, he jumped on the roof. I saw hands rough-looking, black fingernailed hands sticking down from the windshield."
The creature then let out a deep grunt that was enough to send the teen into action. He turned the key, fired up the Celica, and stomped on the gas pedal. As the car lurched forward, the creature fell off but managed to get up and give chase. Chris estimated that he was going at least 35 miles per hour when the creature finally caught up and attempted to leap on the car again.
"I looked in the rearview mirror and saw something, and I heard a crash on the roof."
Chris was truly in fear for his life by this time. He began to swerve back and forth trying to dislodge the attacker. He never saw it fall, but eventually the swerving must have worked because the creature was no longer clawing and banging on the roof. At that point, he held the accelerator down and sped for home. When he pulled into the driveway, Chris blew the horn frantically before jumping out of the car and running into the house. His father told reporters that
Chris was so upset he left the car running. He was huffing and puffing. In a few minutes, he started crying. We asked him what had happened. He said what he saw was 7 feet tall, had red eyes, and 3 fingers on each hand.
Shocked, Mr. Davis went out to inspect the car. He noticed that the driver's side mirror was bent and twisted. He also checked the roof and found scratches in the paint. Was this evidence of the creature's attack? It was all very strange, but he felt sure that something had truly happened to his son. The car damage, along with Chris's state of shock, seemed to confirm it.
Well, is it safe to say that Chris is not loving it?
Oh my God. Can't you just give this guy some respect?
Well.
Okay, just so you know, he was shot to death in his home a few years ago.
Wait, what was
that? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, just to bring some reality to the situation.
It's not part of the story.
Super sad, huh?
I'm not loving that.
Basically, Chris and his dad, Tommy, hear the story of the Way's car getting all scratched up by a creature, and they're like, holy shit, that's the same thing that I saw. They go to the sheriff's office thinking they might be able to help figure out what the hell's going on. The sheriff, from the first moment, was very convinced that Davis was telling the truth. And again, that was confirmed down the road with a polygraph. Yes, polygraphs are not admissible in court, but it's really hard for a 17-year-old kid to fake a polygraph.
Yeah, with flying colors, you can't just pass.
Yeah, real tough. Shortly after these two stories emerged, a couple other stories came out that chronologically happened prior to the Way car mauling and prior to Davis's incident on the side of the road. However, these people felt like, okay, this is crazy. I'm a crazy person. I'm not going to report this.
Yeah.
But then when they hear people talking about the same thing, they're like, okay, maybe I'm not completely out of my mind. We've got three of these stories that happened prior. We're going to go through all three of them. The first one, a guy named George Holloman, and he had actually been mentioned to the sheriff when the police first investigated the car damage at the Way's house. This was a 31-year-old construction worker. He described an incident from October of the previous year, so October of 1987. He was riding his bicycle on a back road near Browntown. He's on the south side of Scape Ore Bridge, so very similar area here, when he stopped for a drink of water and a cigarette. Here's a quote from the police report. He saw what he thought was a dead tree that lightning had struck. The dark shape stood up like a man. It was 7 or 8 feet tall, black in color, and possibly covered in hair. They looked at each other until a car drove by, highlighting the creature's eyes and startling it, causing it to back into the woods and out of sight. The creature's eyes were again reported as red in this story, just for the record.
Interesting.
Holloman's lack of interest in any media attention and his reluctance to come forward helped the credibility of his story in a time where many hoaxes and false reports were being filed. Obviously, this is a recurring problem in the world of cryptids. Once something comes out, there are a bunch of assholes that try and come out and fake it and get attention for it. So this guy was kind of on the opposite side of the fence. He was very reluctant to come forward. There was such a frenzy following the Lizard Man reports. We're going to go into that a little bit more. But if he wanted media attention, it was at his fingertips and he didn't want it. So just a little more credibility to him. A second and similarly reluctant witness came forward, George Plyler. His incident occurred even earlier in the spring of 1986. So he and three other workers were putting a hog pen in the swamp in waist-deep quicksand.
Oof.
Is that like a hunting thing? Or why would you be putting a hog pen in quicksand in the swamp?
I honestly have no idea. My experience with hogs is zero.
Okay, I have no experience with hogs or really with the South, but this was told very matter-of-factly in Lyle's book, so I'm taking it at, you know, I'm sure that this is legit. Plyler got out of the middle while the other three guys were still working, and he turned around to see something looking at him from around the trunk of a tree. It was a face shaped like a human's, its eyes were red around the pupils, and its arms hung like an ape's. The animal quickly took off running. Again, he reports, quote,
"The features were more like a human than any animal I've ever seen. The arms were a little bit longer than normal human being arms, but the legs were long and skinny, along with a little body."
His coworkers saw nothing because they were still in the quicksand working on the pen. He decided not to even mention it to them.
This sounds like a terrible job.
He's like, nobody's ever going to work with me again. Manual labor guy. So here's the interesting thing about Plyler's story. Up until his death in 2009, he maintained the exact same report of what happened. It never deviated at all from the original story that he told. So, third story. This is probably my favorite of the stories that came out at this period. This one's from a crop duster pilot named Frank Mitchell. So he was just taking off one morning when he saw something run across the runway below him. He said it was difficult to say if it was Bigfoot or Lizard Man. Now, he didn't actually use those terms, but the way that Lyle interviewed him and the way that he was described, the guy didn't actually come forward and give specific lizard qualities to it.
Sure.
There's a theme in a lot of these Bishopville stories that they could either go a lizard direction or a Bigfoot direction.
Well, yeah, you said something a little bit earlier that confused me. You said hairy.
Yeah. So some of the reports do say that it had hair or that it looked like it could have had hair. And again, that makes things a little bit fuzzy because...
Fuzzy. could have had hair? What?
Well, when you see something in the dark and it's moving really quickly, I think it's difficult to tell exactly.
The way you said it, I thought that you were implying that they used to have hair and no longer do now.
No, they were balding guys? No. Yeah. No, just it was unclear whether they were seeing hair on it or perhaps matted scales, matted down hair. There could have been
filth.
Yeah,
general
just gross. Yeah. Right. But there's a little bit of gray territory here where there's almost like a spectrum like...
I'm sorry.
Oh,
there's
my God.
Just too many.
Where some of them are very clearly lizard-like in their descriptions. Sure. And then others are kind of on the spectrum between lizard and Bigfoot. Which that's a whole nother set of theories that exist. Okay, so these three guys have come forward with additional stories, again, kind of reluctant witnesses. We don't hear anything else big for about 10 days. And then on July 24th at around 2 a.m., another report rolls in. This I'm also going to quote from Lyle's book because he summarizes it better than I ever could. Around 2 a.m. on July 24th, two teenagers rushed into the Lee County Sheriff's Office and asked to speak to an officer. They were breathing hard and obviously upset. Deputy Wayne Atkinson responded. As he approached the teens, he asked what the problem was. Without hesitation, they blurted out, "I think we saw the lizard man." The two teens, Rodney Nolf and Shane Stokes, said they were out driving with their girlfriends along Highway 15 when something darted across the road in front of them. It appeared to be, quote, a large muscular animal, end quote, which moved on two legs. The creature was only visible for a few seconds before it jumped on a tall fence and disappeared into the woods. Deputy Atkinson could not be sure if it had anything to do with the so-called lizard man, but he felt they were telling the truth based on their sincerity and their demeanor. Atkinson told reporters at the item,
"I've been in law enforcement long enough to know when somebody's scared."
A few hours later, the sheriff's office received another strange report. This time it was a call from a Browntown resident who said she heard some sort of unusual howls coming from the nearby woods. The office wouldn't normally have paid much attention to such a report, but given the lizard man situation and the earlier sighting that night, Atkinson thought it might be a good idea to drive over to the area to have a look around. State Trooper Mike Hodge was also on duty, so Atkinson convinced him to ride along. The two men drove over to Browntown, where they began slowly patrolling the back roads using a spotlight. While driving along Bramlett Road, they came upon several 40-gallon drums that had been crushed and scattered on the road with some other garbage. They decided to get out and investigate. The officers first examined the drums, but could find no apparent clues as to what had crushed them or why they had been left in the road. While looking around with flashlights, they also noticed several tree limbs hanging nearly 9 feet overhead, which had been snapped. All the while, the officers got the feeling that someone or something was watching them. Heavy woods lined the road, so it wasn't too difficult for something to conceal itself just out of sight. Figuring garbage must have fallen off the back of a truck or been dumped on purpose, the officers returned to their car and left the scene. They continued down the road a short distance but saw nothing else of interest, so they made a U-turn and doubled back. As they passed by the strewn garbage a second time, they saw what looked to be footprints going across the road, footprints that were not there minutes before. They immediately stopped the car and got out. There in the dirt was a set of huge animal tracks unlike any they had ever seen. The impressions clearly showed a large oval palm pad, a prominent heel, and three claw-like toes which sunk to the depth of nearly 1.5 inches. From toe to heel, the prints measured a whopping 14 inches in length and at the widest point 7 inches across. The stride was just as astounding, measuring over 3 feet per step. The lawmen were not sure what to make of it. Was this the footprint of the elusive lizard man or the work of a clever prankster? How could a prankster have known they would drive by the area again?
I was pretty spooked.
Trooper Hodge was quoted as saying in the July 28, 1988 edition of the Rock Hill Herald.
They were just some weird tracks. They were too consistent to be fake. They were deep down in that hard dirt.
And indeed, one of the curious aspects of the tracks was how difficult it would have been for a hoaxer to make the foot impressions in such dry substrate, especially with such a short window of opportunity.
So this was not quicksand.
Deputy Atkinson, in fact, said, "I stomped in the road and I couldn't make a single track." He's completely baffled as to how it happened.
So you're talking something really, really heavy.
Yes. Big and scary and heavy and clawed. Maybe Harry, maybe
Harry,
not Harry.
Maybe not.
Yeah. The officers did not like the idea of having to follow the tracks in the dark, but they knew it would be best to investigate while the trail was still hot. So with one hand on their gun and the other holding a flashlight, they followed the trackway for approximately 300 yards before the footprints finally veered off into the brush. At that point, they decided it would be best to wait for daylight. It was simply too spooky to think about trudging off into the dark woods. Whatever had made the tracks might be waiting for them out there. The sheriff obviously gets involved at that point and goes out and investigates. There's a lot of debate as to whether these tracks are real or not because they almost in some ways look too perfect.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
I mean, they're really, really solid looking tracks.
Do you have a picture?
Like someone had cut them out of a board or something.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, but both of the police officers were very reliable witnesses. And again, the depth of the tracks and the speed with which they appeared, it makes a hoaxing situation pretty difficult.
But we'll have this picture up at frightday.com in the show notes of this episode.
Of course. Immediately following these stories, there was a huge media frenzy. We're talking huge. People Magazine, Oprah Winfrey, Tom Brokaw, even the Today Show covered the story. In fact, the Today Show itself broadcast live from the area with the sheriff as their main guest. So this was either a really low news month.
Yeah.
Or for whatever reason, people just got really, really fascinated with this. And as happens when people get fascinated with things,
Roker shows up.
Well, no, I don't know that Roker was around, but hoaxers showed up. On August 5th, a guy named Kenneth Orr, who was an airman stationed at Shaw Air Force Base, he filed a report with the police saying he'd encountered the lizard man on Highway 15 and he'd shot and wounded it. So he gave them several scales and a small quantity of blood as evidence. He then recanted the account 2 days later because
I got a pocket full of blood and a couple of scales here in my hat.
Right. Well, he apparently was arraigned for unlawfully carrying a pistol and was also arraigned for filing a false police report. According to Orr, he had invented the sighting in order to keep the stories about the lizard man in circulation. And granted, there are some rather kind reasons that people perform these hoaxes. A place like Bishopville isn't necessarily an economic hotspot. So when you get an influx of cash because people are interested in this local legend.
It seems like you're talking a lot of crud on Bishopville.
No, I'm not talking crud. Do you see where I live?
I'd like to point out that there are some notable residents that reside in Bishopville, South Carolina. Like the Button King, Dalton Stevens.
Well,
he currently resides there.
Oh, the Button King. The guy, the buttons.
Yeah, he's got physical pins all over him. Or Drink Small, the blues doctor. Who he was a soul musician.
Sure.
So there's not a lot going on there in the way of industry and economy. It could be a very good reason for people to try and keep something like this stirred up because it's clearly bringing money into the community, sure. Which is a good thing, right?
I mean, what is it, 3,000 people?
3,500.
3,500. Yeah. Not a large...
tiny little place.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit upsetting that hoaxers come out, but you can also understand the perspective of why people might be desperate to keep this thing moving. Things died down a little bit after that, but then at the end of August, a high-ranking official in the Army Corps of Engineers was driving along, this is my favorite road name ever, McDuffie Road, 8 miles from Browntown. The gentleman's name has been changed, for the story it was given is Phillips, Colonel Phillips, but he actually asked in the police report that his name be changed for public consumption because he was really concerned about how people would view him after reporting the story. His wife was asleep in the front seat. They were returning from a wedding rehearsal. He came around a curve and saw a large brownish creature emerge from the shadows and run across the road. He described it as about 8 feet tall, running fast on two legs with a tail that fell just short of reaching the ground. He yelled to his wife to wake up, and she saw it just as it ran into the trees on the other side of the road. They reported the sighting to Lee County Sheriff's Office, but again requested that the names be withheld. It's an interesting piece of the story because he was a very reputable person based on what the sheriff's office said, even though they didn't release his name publicly. And so they took the report very, very seriously. There was a long period of quiet. There are some stories of a report here or there, but in terms of actual viable stories, there really wasn't another one that cropped up until February of 2008. A couple in Bishopville, South Carolina, Bob and Dixie Rawson, reported strange damage to their vehicle, traces of blood, and the disappearance of some of their cats.
Ooh.
Based on how the damage looks.
Some of their cats.
Yeah. If you have that many that you can say some of them.
Well, we think some of them have disappeared.
Ugh.
You know.
Come on, Dixie.
Okay. Based on the look of the damage, some people claim that this was the return of the lizard man. The blood traces from the vehicle were sent to a veterinary lab in California and were found to be from a domestic dog.
Oh, man.
Yep. That's a letdown.
Yep. they thought that it was a coyote or a wolf, but apparently the blood said it was a domestic dog.
Wait, then why did they send the blood in?
Because they're trying to figure out what it was, and there were people that were saying that it was Lizard Man. The interesting thing, though, is the new sheriff discovered a dead cow and a dead coyote in a field next to the Rawson's home shortly thereafter. It does seem strange that a domestic dog could take down a cow and a coyote. Maybe it's like a dire dog?
Dogs can do damage. We've all seen Cujo.
They can do damage. I haven't seen Cujo.
I haven't either.
Yeah, well, I guess we haven't all seen. A 2012 episode of the sci-fi series Fact or Faked Paranormal Files focused on South Carolina's Lizard Man legend. The investigative team, led by former FBI Special Agent Ben Hansen, went deep into the forest near Bishopville and emerged with a video, which we're going to post on our show notes. This pisses me off beyond belief.
Ooh.
It was a deliberately faked video that they then later admitted was deliberately faked. They said it was a social experiment, but the dumb thing is it doesn't do any to help those who believe in Lizard Man, but it also does nothing to help those who want to disprove his existence, because all it proves is that you can get people to believe shit. That doesn't mean that there isn't truth. It just means that people believed this.
Call a spade a spade. It's a fucking prank.
I feel like it was really disrespectful. Especially only 3 years after poor Chris Davis was shot dead in his house.
Whoa, come on. We don't have to keep bringing that up.
Well, it bums me out.
Sure don't.
Something fierce. Images were also taken in 2015. A woman named Sarah, enlisting nothing other than her first name, took these images. They will also be on the show notes. As you can tell by looking at them.
I think we mentioned this in an episode earlier.
We probably did. These are bad. Like, that is Reptar. I know I'm not supposed to talk about Reptar, yeah, but that's freaking Reptar.
You remember this, Sam? It looks like a Godzilla. Yeah, or
that is
like
awesome.
Oh, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
Rubbery suit. Maybe it would be in a live-action Power Rangers-esque show.
Yeah, real frustrating.
It's obviously fake.
Well, it's frustrating because it's really fun to think that there's something else going on, and then it's like, oh, wait, never mind. Nope.
It's a clickbait article.
Just an asshole.
Yeah.
In terms of explanations for what might be going on down in Bishopville, the two, well, let's go ahead and say three. The three biggest explanations, one of them that they were all hoaxes. To me, some of the reports very well may have been hoaxes, but especially with Chris Davis's story and with the Colonel's story, I think it's really hard to just write all of them off, okay? The second story is a little bit more complicated, and it surrounds a gentleman that lived very close, within about a half a mile of where Chris Davis broke down on that June night in 1988.
And this is before he was shot dead in his apartment?
Yeah, that was 2009. It was his house.
Oh, it's a house. He owned a house. Okay.
He did own a house. It wasn't his apartment.
And it was a house he was shot dead in. Yeah. Murdered.
So this gentleman, Lucius Brother Elmore.
That is a great name.
Not to be confused with Lucius from Empire.
No, don't watch that.
Lucius Brother Elmore apparently had purchased some new air conditioning units. He was really worried about people stealing these air conditioning units out of his barn, so he was sleeping out with his air conditioning units. He came out a couple weeks after Chris Davis came out with his story and said, you know, I'm worried that I may be the Lizard Man that he thinks he saw. Basically, what this guy claims is that somebody was trying to steal an air conditioning unit out of his barn in the middle of the night. He wrapped himself in a burlap sheet and went chasing after him.
Was he sleeping in the nude?
I don't know. I mean, that wasn't indicated. But
okay.
So he goes chasing after this individual. He said he couldn't tell what the individual looked like. Now, Mr. Davis was an African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And this Elmore brother Lucius went chasing after some random person, he says, in the middle of the night. The person dropped the air conditioning unit and he saw him get in a car and speed off. So he's saying that he thinks that Davis was trying to steal an air conditioning unit and that he scared him off, and that wrapped in burlap, he looked like Lizard Man.
You're implying that he left out the detail that he was actively stealing an AC unit.
Well, no. That's what Elmore
from
is
a Lizard
implying.
Man.
Yeah. Couple things that I take issue with on this story. First off, nothing about Mr. Davis's reputation in town would indicate that he would be somebody who would stop in the middle of the night at some random barn on the way home and try to steal an air conditioning unit. Also, there's nothing to indicate that he knew there would be air conditioning units in the barn, because it wasn't like he was friends with this guy. Okay. Second of all, How did his car get damaged to hell? Because there were very legitimately huge scratches on it.
Well, what if he hit a tree while he was burning out, getting away from this failed theft?
Hitting a tree would not cause the kinds of scratches that they saw. The rearview mirrors weren't just broken. They were twisted and mangled very manually.
Sure.
By something very strong. Again, how would that happen?
I don't know. I do have to say, though, that a 17-year-old boy's capacity for destroying a motor vehicle should not be overlooked.
Let's back up just a second, though. This is a kid who is paying for his own gas. He's paying for his own car. He's just worked a late shift at McDonald's to pay for these things. Why would he destroy them? His family doesn't have a bunch of money. He's not going to be able to come home and dad's going to write a check to fix his car. He knows it's going to be on him. So that seems a little illogical, too. Then we take the issue of him passing the polygraph with flying colors. And then on top of it, remember that crop duster we talked about earlier? Without even prompting, when Lyle Blackburn was interviewing him, he said,
"Oh yeah, that story about that brother Lucius? There's no way that he was the Lizard Man, because the day I saw Lizard Man run across my runway, Elmore was back in the shop on the other side of the shop and I could see him."
Because apparently Elmore brother Lucius was next to have his fields dusted. So he says, there's no way that was him. I saw something run across and it sure as hell wasn't Elmore.
At this point, I give more credibility to the 17-year-old than this brother Lucius.
Yeah, brother Lucius who sleeps in a barn with his air conditioning units and runs around in burlap sheets in the middle of the night.
The most reliable.
Right. And this sheriff who Blackburn interviewed extensively is very well spoken, very calm, very rational. He's not, you know, some guy who is trying to create some kind of crazy frenzy here. He really wanted to rule it out. And in fact, the thought of it being a hoax was much more scary to them as police officers, because if there's a crazy person out there hoaxing and willing to hurt people, that's much more terrifying than perhaps some animal that lives in the swamp. That's the second explanation. I don't really put much stock in that one, but that is an explanation that's out there. And then the third explanation is that it could be a Bigfoot. If you notice, there are some very similar points in a lot of these stories. We hear colors being brown, sometimes greenish, but if you think of a Bigfoot crawling around in the swamp, it's perfectly logical to think that they might have green shit all over them.
Sure, and right? Both bipedal.
Absolutely. Both long arms. Now, obviously, the tail becomes an issue, but other than the hoaxed story, only one of the reports includes the story of a tail. I think it is interesting how many similarities there are. The thing that I have trouble with is I've never heard of a Bigfoot attacking anybody. So the way that it attacked Chris Davis seems a little strange. And also being agile enough to jump on top of the car and flop around and claw at things, that seems inconsistent with a Bigfoot.
What about those messing with Sasquatch commercials?
Well, yeah, but that's different. I mean, he wasn't messing with anybody.
He was stealing the Bigfoot's AC unit.
No, he wasn't, though.
I'm almost certain. He wasn't. And the AC unit was full of jacklings.
He wasn't. He really wasn't. Oh, I love jacklings.
All right. Gross.
So he wasn't. But to me, reading a lot of these stories, I kept feeling a very strong Bigfoot vibe. And I heard an interview with Lyle Blackburn where he talked about it. And he said, certainly there's a possibility that some of these reports were Bigfoot, because there have been Bigfoot sightings in the area. You know, there are enough similarities in some of the stories. But I also think that there are enough stories that are specifically lizardy that I think we may have both a lizard man and a Bigfoot down there. And I think they could be buddies.
I'd like to propose a theory.
Okay, what's your theory?
I don't know a lot about this topic, but I do know that in the past we've mentioned reptilians. And I know that there is a big difference between a reptilian and maybe this lizard man.
Right.
But what are the chances?
A reptilian and a Bigfoot bred and created a lizard man?
That's not what I was going to say, but that's possible. Okay. I was just going to say a rogue one.
Now
just
we're into science.
Kind of like just came up out of the earth, you know, because they're not all going to be smart.
Well, or they're not all going to like living there. They might be like, screw this.
I mean, he's the Ted Kaczynski of the reptilian world.
Or it could be like, maybe like, you know, that show about the Amish that send their kids into
this is reptilian Rumspringer.
Right. They just send them into the city.
I like that you know what they call it.
Well.
Yeah, that was a very Sam thing that you just did.
I apologize.
Hilarious.
Well, I know
so,
things.
I know you know things. I know things. Byron, you're very smart.
And I don't know things, so stop.
Oh, you guys. Right. Anyhow, I do think that there's viability to the lizard stories. I also think that some of these stories could be Bigfoot, but I think that it's very interesting, and I'm hoping that there are some additional things that emerge. I like that it hasn't caught the kind of attention that some of the other cryptids have, because it does keep the stories a little bit more pure and a little bit easier to sort fact from fiction.
Well, the sightings are specifically regional, and they're few and far between.
Which I kind of like. I mean, it makes for scarce evidence, but I think it also makes for less bullshit to wade through. I really enjoyed Lyle's book. I'm hoping that we hear more about the Lizard Man. And I'm also hoping Lyle does research on some more cryptids, because holy cow, it makes it so much easier to do a KCC report when I've got like really great in-depth firsthand research from an in-the-field real-life cryptozoologist. One of these days I'll have funding to go do that, you guys.
And definitely go pick up this book.
Please, pick it up. It's really fantastic.
LyleBlackburn.com is probably the best way.
Yes.
I'm sure it's also on Amazon, but I think always buy direct from the author when possible.
You can get an autographed copy for a moderate fee.
Which is well worth it. It's a great autograph. I can testify to that.
Once again, LyleBlackburn.com. And Kelly, thank you so much for that report.
Thanks, you guys.
That was a lot of fun. That was great, Kel. Thank you. I really
enjoyed
that.
Thanks for listening.
I like the Lizard Man.
I feel
man.
Like this one you guys were much nicer to.
That book makes it hard to argue with.
Well, and also, you already yelled at me once for picking on that boy who got murdered.
Yeah, if you pick on anything else, I'm just going to tell you that they got shot. I'm
murdered.
Sorry,
it's all right. I'm just going to go back to thinking about how fantastic my 4th of July weekend was.
Was it fantastic?
It was a great time. We relaxed. I watched fireworks. I only almost killed three of my friends.
You know what would have probably made it even better for you, knowing you, Byron?
What would that be?
Is if you would have run into a serial killer.
Then just may happen in a film that we watched this week called You Are Not Alone. Let's talk about it.
Let's.
Don't know what I'm doing.
We hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
You Are Not Alone is a 2014 American horror thriller film directed by Derek Munger. Sam, could you tell us what this film's about?
Six people have been murdered in little more than a week in Fury, and we have to confirm the identity of the killer, but have released this police sketch.
Natalie, directionless after graduating from college, returns to her hometown on the 4th of July to visit old friends and reconnect with family. But Natalie isn't the only one in town for the holiday. Filmed from a point of view perspective, You Are Not Alone tells the tale of a psychotic killer loose in a small town through the eyes of his victim.
POV horror.
Literally through the eyes.
I'm a sucker, guys. Films like Maniac to, Hardcore Henry. Which
it's a fun gimmick.
It takes the elements that we like from found footage and it puts us even more in their shoes. They can't drop their eyes.
You look at things. That's what you do.
It's the solution.
Well,
how do you feel about this?
What's interesting about it is the part that you guys hated, I liked.
Oh, okay.
So the intro, when you guys were whiny about it going slow and happening.
I would like to say that we weren't whining and we didn't hate it.
I thought it was beautiful. I usually have more, excuse you. Please don't do that.
Sorry.
God, Sam.
I know.
I usually don't complain about slow, conversational-driven openings to films. This is 35 minutes before anything horrific happens. Mm-hmm. I did have trouble with the dialogue. I didn't necessarily have much interest in the characters for the first 35 minutes of this movie.
But the music was really good. The
music was great.
And it was filmed well.
Beautiful film.
But for character building, it didn't seem to encourage any kind of significant connection with the characters.
See, I had this feeling there was stuff that got left on the cutting room floor, details about like the parents that maybe would have made the story a bit more compelling that we were left out of.
So we have Natalie. She comes home. She's picked up at the airport by her brother.
Who's late to get her.
Because he has this long story about how he was just out camping and somebody cut their foot and they were trying to do first aid, but nobody had any first aid kits.
And they even mentioned that she's bored with his story.
Yeah.
But I think the point is they're supposed to be telling these stories to make them all seem very human and relatable and sure. similar to us. Like, I don't know that it's necessarily to invest in them as characters.
Banter is sparkling, engaging, and difficult to step away from.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do think that it effectively made them seem like normal people.
Sure.
Although the man with those horrible pants.
Get off the pants.
Those horrible pants.
Normal millennials. They need to get the fuck off my lawn.
Light denim's coming back.
It wasn't light. It was medium. And I'm not even sure that it was denim. No, I think it might have been polyester.
It was light. And I bet there was an elastic waistband.
This is
Miles needed new pants.
I'll agree with that.
We can all agree on that.
It is unfortunate that for the first 35 minutes, that was one of the major things you talked about.
Yeah, it bothered me. But the rest of it I liked.
Okay.
And the one thing that kind of bugged me as we wrapped up towards the end was some of the characters that we had spent time with in the beginning. I really wanted them to tie in somehow at the end.
Okay.
Like, I wanted Katie to come back. I wanted Miles to come back. I'm like, well, what happened?
Yeah, but in
reality, I
kind of
wanted the captain to come back, only because it was the captain.
How about we start where the action kicks off, right? There were subtle clues about this serial killer. There was a radio report and then something on the TV.
Not just that.
Ooh,
then
there was newspaper.
And the missing kids at the ball game.
And Katie's dad was a police officer, and he was trying to tell them that they had to be in by 11 o'clock because there was a curfew.
Definitely a police officer, not an actor, though.
No, but that's okay. He didn't need to be.
All right. I did like the subtle drop-ins, especially after the baseball game. That's where I got my first chill. Maybe the fact that it did take so long to build made it more powerful when it happened.
Something I enjoyed about this movie, there were a lot of parallels to Jaws.
Really?
Yeah, in that there's this outsider who comes home, like, and her friends, obviously, they're fixtures in the town, and she doesn't belong necessarily anymore. So she's like Chief Brody.
Sure.
An outsider that comes in.
Yeah.
We have the big celebration for the 4th of July. All of a sudden, this terror is present in the community, and everyone's kind of panicking, and things unravel quickly, taking a little while to build to it.
I need to watch Jaws. I feel like that's a very 4th of July film to watch.
It is. It gave me that, nothing gives me the Jaws feeling.
Sure.
But it still kind of felt like, hey, it's summer, you know?
And that is something I think that was well done in the first half of this movie. And even at the beginning of the second, third act, wherever the action starts kicking in, is the way this was shot definitely like highlighted the beauty of a small town. All of us, I think, grew up in a town very similar to this, walking down sidewalks, fireworks in the street, kind of thing.
Yeah, ballpark. Fireworks are still not just legal, but heavily encouraged.
Sure. I really enjoyed that, and I thought it was beautiful. It was very well shot.
Yeah.
And when things happen, it's worth it. The payoff is incredibly strong.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil too much.
No.
You know, we do have a serial killer.
It's a serial killer, and it's scary, and it's very realistic. There are some stupid decisions made by our POV heroine.
Which we love in slashers.
Maybe.
These were aggressive mistakes. And we're not just talking about going to some weird house party where people are fighting about cell phone pranks.
Which she perpetrated.
Very funny moment. Probably the only laughable moment in this movie. Quote, I'm a fucking hurricane.
I'm a fucking hurricane. I forgot. It was
a very
good.
Fun moment.
Oh, it was good.
Which our protagonists were laughing at that as well. It wasn't like that was supposed to be a serious.
Right. Yeah. I think they approached that party scene in a fairly realistic way.
It seemed realistic to me. Everyone seemed pretty terrible.
Yeah. Serial killer moments, extremely brutal. They did my favorite thing, the fast tackle stabs.
Yeah.
Don't hesitate. A killer's going to run at you and try to knock you over.
Yeah, don't wave the knife around in the air, making it go whoosh, whoosh.
Exactly.
Whoosh. Which, do you know how fast you would have to swing a knife to do that?
Yeah. You got to be fully swinging your arm.
Yeah.
It doesn't look cool.
I could do that.
Just stab.
Go get me a knife.
No.
No, for sure no.
Okay.
I love a masked killer.
You do.
And that went away and then showed up again for a brief moment. Different mask, a wetter mask. Fresher mask?
Winter?
A squishy mask.
Yeah, tons of fun. Man, I don't want to get too deep into...
Then let's not. I thought this movie was pretty good, but then I found out that it was a Kickstarter, and apparently they only got $8,000 for it. I don't know how much they funded on their own, obviously, but...
Well, yeah, but that's a very small budget.
Really, really small. I mean, like, that's... Anytime that somebody does something for that little money, I'm just blown away, and I feel like I should be smarter and be able to figure out how to do something for that much money.
I love seeing movies like this that were kickstarted and actually paid off. You look at movies like Muck, who received massive amounts of money on Kickstarter and then delayed their
rewards.
And just
plowed it all straight into the ground.
As well as
plowed it all straight into the boobs.
Spent money going to the Playboy Mansion?
Yeah.
On the boobs.
Hope they got their shots.
Yeah, you see movies like this and it makes the whole thing make sense. You hear horror stories about horror movies on Kickstarter and think that this is a successful one.
Yeah.
What are your final thoughts on this movie?
I thought that this movie had incredible production values. It looked great. It sounded great. The music fit perfectly. It wasn't necessarily my bag.
It was hip. I loved it.
But it was really...
super cool.
I thought it was great for this movie. And it sounded fantastic. Really...
lots of footsteps. Lots of creaks.
Yeah.
Lots of door noises.
Yeah, that were done maybe not necessarily super subtly, but extremely effective use of sound. And it looked gorgeous. It really did. I am so impressed with what they managed to do on their budget. Again, the first 35 minutes of this movie were... They drug a little bit. But when we got down to it, it really took off. I really liked where this movie went. I'm going to give it a 6.0.
I really enjoyed myself with this movie. I know that I've mentioned the first 35 several times, and maybe on a different day I would be in the mood to watch that and enjoy it because it was very well done. Is that a spooky train outside?
I think it's just plain.
Airline of the Damned.
Okay, sure. It was beautiful, and maybe I missed a little bit of development out of frustration. But yeah, when things turned on, they were shocking, and they were brutal, and they were right up my alley. And I love seeing small indies like this that do better than movies that had budgets 4 times, 10 times, 20 times the amount what they had 100 times.
100.
This is a 4th of July horror film that I would gladly return to every year. I really enjoyed myself, and I give it a 5.4.
The reason that I'm giving it such a good score has a lot more to do with the beginning than it does to do with the end. The production value, the music, the acting I thought was pretty darn good, even though some of the characters were annoying. I thought they were well acted annoying. The way that it unraveled was genuinely a little unpredictable. You weren't really sure what was going to happen. And I like that in horror movies, especially slashers, because normally you feel like you know exactly what direction things are going to go. She made a couple stupid mistakes that made me very embarrassed to be female. And I hate it when slasher movies do that, which is the only reason I'm not giving it any higher. But I'd give it a 7.0. And I think that it's worth checking out on Amazon. I would pay the $1.99 again and again and again to watch it on Amazon.
I feel like this is the third week in a row I've given the lowest score.
Yeah, you're turning into a curmudgeon.
Am I a curmudgeon?
Bit of a mudge.
And that's our review of You Are Not Alone, a movie that you can get, as Kelly said, on Amazon, other VOD platforms, or you could get it directly at yanafilm.com. Support the director the most direct way you can.
Agreed.
And if you've seen this film, let us know what you thought. Tweet us at FrightDay on Twitter or leave a comment below this episode's show notes at FrightDay.com. which is a place where you can see all kinds of fun Lizard Man pictures. And if you just zoom out and look at all our other fun articles.
Just go look at everything.
Yeah,
read especially Kelly's stuff.
Kelly's stuff. There's trailers. There's reviews. I know Alex has been covering Scream. And Elizabeth just wrapped up Penny Dreadful.
Nice. I am envious.
I wish I had time for those too. And we just had a fun conversation in our Facebook group. Kind of backfired for me. Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/FrightDay. The question I asked was, which one of us three would be the final survivor in a slasher film?
Hey, and what was the consensus on that, guys?
You know, I'm not actually sure. I just know for a fact that there's one person that said that I would survive. Myself, I said that.
Yeah.
I said you would survive.
Oh, Sam did as well. Thank you.
I said that
it.
You were too nice to disembowel.
But I mean,
a couple people said that you would be one of the last two and that then you would be the serial killer.
Oh, really? They pinned me as the flip-flop?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know about that. Maybe worse than being murdered.
It's an impressive way to write it.
Then an interesting point was raised. Which one of you would survive?
The listener?
So, yeah, send us an email or a tweet or a Facebook message.
Or just join the group.
Yeah.
Facebook.com/...
Come talk with us.
...group/FrightDay. Yeah, just join in the conversation. And guys, please say that I would live. Someone?
No.
Byron wants to live.
And if you like our show and want to help us make it better, grab something spooky at shop.frightday.com. You can pledge your allegiance to us at patreon.com/FrightDay. which is a place where you'll have access to content like us hanging out before recording episodes like this. We're back. We took a couple weeks off.
Get to know each other.
We can talk non-horror things if you'd like.
Yeah.
Madness.
You can tell us about your bad day.
I don't want to hear about people. I mean, if you pay money, it's monthly. Oh, I'll Byron. Listen to your bad days. I'm a therapist, I guess, now.
Byron.
That sounds great. You'll also have access to hour-long episodes of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies. Mm-hmm. This month, we're talking...
Number stations.
All right.
Super creepy, cryptic, unsolved number stations.
And most helpful of all, you can leave a review for us on iTunes.
Please
That's the
do.
Best way to help
Please.
Us. Bottom Please. Line. All right.
Please.
Okay. We've got a couple exciting things coming out in the next couple weeks.
Obvi.
The Black Coat's Daughter / February. I would like to call it February, but
it's better.
It's a little film that's coming out exclusively via DirecTV.
Weird.
So we're going to be running over to Luke's house, maybe?
Yay!
Yay, because I don't have that for sure. Why would I just say the name Luke in a podcast?
It's good.
All right, Luke, this is a shout out. Friend of the podcast, Luke.
Love you,
we're
Luke.
We're coming to your house.
Again, and this time you'll know it.
Also, once again, The Mind's Eye will be the week after that. This is a tentative schedule. Hopefully things work out, but yeah.
Lights out.
Lights out after that. You're mm-hmm. right. Lots of things happening this summer. Kelly,
mm-hmm.
are you sleeping?
Trying.
Please sit upright.
I'm trying.
Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Kelly Frightday on Twitter, or you can email me, kelly@frightday.com.
And I'm at Sam Frightday on Twitter. Email me, sam@frightday.com.
And I'm at Byron McCoy. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. And until next Frightday... I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam. Just dial 911. That's it.
That's
Byron
the last straw.
Pull a good old Bud Dwyer right here. Honestly, right here on the podcast.
I should always have a manila.
Just a manila envelope.
I should always have a manila with a .45.
The Rugrats in Paris really aren't that bad.